Everybody, the Labor, Industry, and Veterans and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy Committee will come to order. I would like to announce that this meeting will take place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. The meeting may be viewed on House Public Information TV, which is available on the House website. As is custom with this committee, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. To the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Before we get started, our committee legislative assistant, Ms. Doyle, will take the roll.
Chair Eklund?
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang?
Present.
Representative Detmer? Representative McDonald?
Here. Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bliss?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Frederick?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Nelson?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, present.
Representative Sundin?
Present.
Representative Mortensen?
Representative Detmer? And we have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle. Quorum is
Mr.
present.
Chair, this is Travis. Representative Detmer let me know that he has a bill up on another committee, but that he is logged in here, but he will check back in when he's actually seated back at the table. So he is in another committee presenting one of his bills.
Thank you, Travis.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is the minutes from February 2nd, 2021. Every member should have received a copy of today's minutes in their inbox. Representative Nelson, did you get a chance to check out the minutes?
Yeah, I make a motion we approve the minutes from the last meeting.
Representative Nelson moves approval of minutes from the February 2nd, 2021 meeting. Any comments or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Say nay. I got to slow down a little bit. Opposed say nay. Minutes are approved. Members, first on the agenda today is House File 88 from Representative Lippert. Before I move the bill, I want to remind at least the members that were on the Veterans and Military Affairs Policy and Finance Committee last year. We heard this bill. It got stalled out due to this little thing called a pandemic that we have going on. And so we're just moving the bill back through committee. So Representative Lippert, I will move House File 88 to be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Lippert, to your bill. And it is also my understanding that Ben Johnson from Veterans Affairs is here to testify or answer questions. Is that correct, Representative Lippert?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All right, please proceed to House File 88.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's good to be with you this afternoon. This bill explicitly authorizes the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs to operate adult daycare programs for veterans. And there's an increased need or increased emphasis in Minnesota on providing support needed so that seniors and others with significant care needs can age at home and remain at home. And adult care daycare programs are a key provider of services. They support the physical, mental, and social well-being of participants and provide much needed respite and a full array of support services for caregivers too. Currently, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs operates an adult day program at the Minnesota Veterans Home in Minneapolis, one of only three in the nation as of 9 months ago anyway. And it's providing these important services to veterans and their caregivers. And though this adult day program is established and operating within the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs understanding of Minnesota Statute 198.006, it needs explicit statutory authority to operate an adult day program and the associated authority to develop rules, policies, and procedures for those operations. So this bill adds a section to 198.006 to provide that statutory authority. And at this time, I'll turn it to Ben Johnson from the department to say more about the bill or to answer questions.
Mr. Johnson, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Eklund, members of the committee, Representative Lippert, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill. And thank you specifically to Representative Lippert and Chair Eklund for working together to get this on the agenda so quickly. I don't have a whole lot to add. Representative Lippert did an outstanding job of reviewing the need for this bill, for this bill language. And I would only add that we actually temporarily closed the adult day program at Minneapolis and only did virtual and remote programming over the past year. Happy to let the committee know that we have reopened for in-person programming beginning this past Monday. This bill simply permits us to develop more concrete rules and potentially allows us to request reimbursements from the federal VA for any services that we're providing. Happy to answer any questions that the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any questions from the committee? I will comment while maybe members are thinking about this. This is a good bill. If anybody in their family has somebody that's suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's or that sort of thing, and the other spouse is the caregiver, it really puts a lot of pressure on that person. So if we can develop these programs in the state to give our veterans and their spouses a break, I think it's just a terrific thing, and I applaud the MDVA for moving forward on this. Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I've got a couple questions, and I am absolutely in support of this bill. I want to get an idea of how this works. First question that I've got for Representative Lippert is, excuse the naivete, but it looks like the bill is changing the word in there from shall to must. And in other testimony, we've heard may, must, and shall. How does that one word change the approach to this particular bill?
Well, Representative Lippert, and we also have Mr. Deeble on if for nonpartisan research, if he might have something to add. Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Raleigh. And I'll turn to Mr. Johnson for the specifics of the difference that language would make in this instance.
Mr. Johnson.
Chair Eklund, Representative Lippert, Representative Raleigh, thank you for the question. It's actually a cleanup change that was recommended by the revisor's office. They are looking to, whenever there's an opportunity to dig into a statute and update to their preferred nomenclature, they are going for consistency throughout statute. So that wasn't a change that we initially requested. It was something the revisor's office recommended to us, sir.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Chair. Two more questions, and they should be pretty quick. Is the MDVA planning on hiring therapists in support of this? Meaning, are they going to bring on FTEs? And then the second question is, how many veterans do you propose are going to be using it or have used it in the past, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Johnson.
Chair, Representative Raleigh. We actually part of the transition away from the in-person programming last year was so that we could make use of the staff that we had working in the adult day care facility at the Minneapolis home. We needed them as direct care staff to our skilled nursing. We do not anticipate hiring additional staff for the operations, simply to bring it back online now that we've reopened. And really the goal here is not to add additional FTEs or requirements. It's simply to establish statutory authority to continue to provide this service. And to your question, we have 30, again, participants that are still enrolled in our distance adult day, so virtual and remote programming. The census at the Adult Day Center at Minneapolis varies week to week. So it's not a program where they come every single day or even every single week. It's sort of a rolling number. One of the challenges that we've had in the past and in the past year was transportation. Not all veterans or their spouses are able to drive. And so we've utilized Metro Transit and things like that to get them dropped off at the veterans home and then returned to their homes after the fact. But there isn't a specific number that we have in the program at any given time. It really is, it really does vary from week to week, or at least it had prior to COVID-19.
Apologize, Mr. Johnson. Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, one follow-up to that. Can you tell us how you feel this will expand into the other veterans' homes in the state?
Mr. Johnson.
Chair Eklund, Representative Raleigh, at this point, we have no plans to expand to our other skilled nursing facilities. We are continuing to, I think our goal was as a first step to have authority to run this program, explicit authority, so that we could develop the rules, processes, and procedures to look at expansion. As was introduced, keeping veterans in their homes as long as possible really does contribute significantly to their quality of life. So the longer we can do this kind of programming, the better it is for the residents, veterans, future residents, and their spouses. But it is certainly on the radar. We wanted to get this in order first before we took actual steps to expand it.
Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, taking care of our veterans is paramount, and it's a duty that we are very much in line with supporting. I appreciate this bill, and I do support it. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Raleigh. Representative McDonald, you had your hand up earlier. Did you take it down? I just want to make sure I don't miss somebody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quick to Representative Raleigh, my first bill 11 years ago was one little change from a word may to shall, and people came out of the woodwork at the Capitol. Lobbyists, special interest groups, everybody. I thought it was the simplest ever. I thought, yeah, as a freshman, I'm going to be pretty lucky here. Shall to will, or will may to shall. Easy. Whew, I learned my lesson. Every word is very important and means something. So it's powerful.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Johnson, so supportive of the bill too, Representative Lippert. I'm just wondering right now in terms of adult daycare programs and just the picture of that, they're incredibly important. My father-in-law was in one with Alzheimer's, and we were able to keep him out of an assisted living facility for a year and a half because it was so helpful. But my mother-in-law had a really hard time. As we know, Alzheimer's is tough. How many are you, I mean, I guess I would just, there's 30 participants pre-COVID, you're saying? And then, I mean, I just am trying to understand the scope and of how you're running it. And I guess, you know, it's, you know, typically with adult daycare programs, you have consistently the person's coming in numerous, you know, either five times a week or three times a week. Like, I guess you said something that didn't strike right to me, that there was inconsistencies. Day programs are like childcare. It's the equivalent of like, I mean, if you didn't have it, consistent care, that wouldn't really help the person that needs help. So I guess, can you clarify that for me?
And Mr. Johnson, I see the commissioner's got his hands up, so I don't know if Commissioner Herkey wants to answer that one, but Commissioner, go ahead, and then we'll go back to Mr. Johnson if need be.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Larry Herkey, I can answer this one. During the COVID period, we're looking to increase census from 30 members to 40. That should be fairly easy based on the fact that the Minneapolis VA is no longer running their program, so we've got a lot of demand there. The intent, Representative Edelson, was to rotate the individuals in cohorts so that they would get one day per, and then we can meet all the requirements for COVID-19. We can keep them associated with the appropriate staff and keep them in their cohorts. Post-COVID, I'd like to keep the census at about 40. I think that's optimum for the location and the staff that we currently have on hand. We could potentially go for a few more, but I think that's probably about the most that we could take based on the facility.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Edelson.
I'm supportive. I'll follow up with other questions offline. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative. Are there any other member questions here to the bill? All right, seeing no further questions or comments, I will renew my motion that House File 88 be re-referred to the General Register. Ms. Doyle will take the roll.
Chair Eklund?
Yes.
Vice Chair Zhang?
Yes.
Representative Detmer? Representative McDonald?
Yes.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Bliss?
Yes.
Representative Edelson?
Yes.
Representative Frederick?
Yes.
Representative Greenman?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Poston?
Yes.
Representative Raleigh?
Yes.
Representative Sundin?
Marks. Since 2011,
Representative Sundin? Representative Detmer? Representative Sundin? And I have 11 ayes, one excuse.
Representative Lippert, I didn't give you a chance for final comments, but on an 11-0 vote, if you have any final comments before you go, you're on your way to the General Register. Representative Lippert.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks, members of the committee. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Members, next on the agenda is the Department of Military Affairs with their presentation on the governor's budget proposal released last week. I think it's Mr. Kerr that's giving that, but I know that General Menke is also here. So, gentlemen, if you're ready to go, please identify yourselves for the record and proceed.
I'm Major General Menke, the Adjutant General, and Mr. Kerr will be presenting the budget for the Department of Military Affairs. Mr. Kerr, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, General Menke. Sir, for the record, my name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. I work for General Menke in assisting in managing the state agency enterprise for the department. Hopefully you see a slide.
Sir, Mr. Kerr.
Awesome. I'm going to, Mr. Chair, we provided a slide pack that includes the total budget picture. We'll only be briefing about the first 21 slides today because those are the ones that are of direct import to the governor's budget proposal. But we felt in the interest of full transparency to our committee of record, we want to provide the other information, and we're happy to answer questions either now or later regarding any of the slides that we have for.
Mr. Kerr, we've been doing the presentation and taking questions at the end, so the committee is used to that. So please proceed.
Very good, Mr. Chairman. So this is the agenda we'll follow. Again, only really moving through the fourth item on the agenda. Yeah, there we go. And so, Mr. Chair, the way our budget is structured in the general fund, there are four appropriations: the general support fund, which covers, I'll go into detail about what that covers, maintenance of military training facilities, enlistment incentive appropriation, and then the emergency services appropriation, which is in the general fund, but it really isn't a requirement for the legislature to intervene. So the way state law works right now, when the governor calls out the National Guard, the adjutant general a cost estimate based on our knowledge, understanding of the potential mission. And we submit that to the Commissioner of Management and Budget, who then, if he concurs, moves that to the chairs of the finance committees in the two chambers. And that, by law, counts as appropriation for the funds and authorizes us to spend them. So there really isn't any legislative action involved, but that's where we're at. So you see the biennial appropriation consists of the general support, the maintenance of military training facilities, and the enlistment incentives program. Part of our bottom line up front, this is actually the change item that's in the governor's budget request. These are the words. It's the same thing as last time, plus a small increase in 2022 and another small increase in 2023, and then into the base to a 4% inflationary growth in that's expected. And we thought the best way to articulate, so these are the same, I'm sorry, this is the same information in a spreadsheet format. You'll see that our actual expenditures in FY20 on the left, the next column, are estimated expenditures in FY21, and then the base for forecast base for 22 and 23, and the governor's recommendations, which as you can see are very similar. It just does give you the detail of how we would break out that change to the accounts. So, Mr. Chair, this is the total picture of our budget. There are basically aspects of this, and we're only going to discuss that Fund 1000, the general fund that's depicted in yellow and circled in red. You'll see this slide again. We'll drill into each of those sub-bullets as we go through the briefing. As a picture, this is the whole pie that we get from the general fund. Obviously, the majority of the funding is in the incentives appropriation, a near equal amount in the maintenance of training facilities, and then a substantially smaller amount in the general support fund. You'll notice that we do have a little slice to the PAI reintegration in this budget year. So that was added to the budget last cycle, and that will roll into the general support account. It won't be listed as a separate line item moving forward. So again, we're going to drill into the general support account of the general fund. And the base for FY20 was $3.124 million. We did have some line item from previous appropriations that we carried forward, $248,000 that was appropriated by the legislature specifically for security improvements and training. And that was really in response to the shootings that occurred in Tennessee a few years ago. And they've allowed us to kind of plus up the security of some of our installations and do some more training for our security force. We also added the reintegration account last time. That replaces a one-time appropriation that we originally received back in 2008 that had carry forward authority. And NMB asked us not to ask for another lump sum like that, but rather to roll the money in. So we did that last budget cycle, but we do track that separately inside the general support account. And then this kind of gives some more detail into what we have. So the difference between FTEs and employees, though it's pretty close at AGO, you'll note that we have 16.95 FTEs out of 17 employees. And what that really indicates is there's a small portion of my salary and the CFO's salary that are paid by the Minnesota State Armory Building Commission. And so that's why we only count as 16.95 instead of 17. But as we get out to Camp Ripley and to the two air wings particularly, we have a lot more employees than we have FTEs because we do receive federal funding for a large number. The vast majority of our employees are funded either 75% federally or 100% federally. And so that makes it really kind of difficult to understand how we can have as many employees as we do for the limited budget that we have compared to other agencies. As you can see, the proportion of how much of that goes to payroll. And we are still paying rent to the Department of Administration for our space in the Veteran Service Building. It's common practice among state agencies. We have about $60,000 a year that goes to interagency transfers. We do have something that's a little unique to our organization, and that's annually we're authorized to make a fund distribution to our units to allow them to buy supplies and some services. So that goes out to about $70,000 a year. But again, not a lot of money here, a little bit in utilities, and then we did spend $200,000 in improvements, security improvements out of that 248 that's listed above. And I'll go on to the second slide here. This is the remainder of what we use that general fund, general support appropriation to pay for. So we pay our phone bills. We have a small portion that goes to support our longstanding Norwegian exchange. The good news is in 2020 and 2021, we didn't have to spend any money on the Norwegian exchange. We expect that to kick back up again in 2022 though. Hopefully, past the COVID thing. We have a small expenses at the headquarters. We do maintain 6 parking passes that the agency pays for that we use for visitors to our facility. And then we have miscellaneous purchases that we make. This is kind of our what we use to run the agency. I'll just leave it with that. We also do have a little bit of revenue to this account. We are authorized to sell surplus equipment And about $20,000 a year comes back. We use the surplus services through the Department of Transportation to assist us in that. And then we're supplemented. In addition to that, the cooperative agreement that pays for many of our employees' salaries to provide services that the feds require, because we have some positions that aren't inside that cooperative agreement but provide agency-wide support, like our human resources operation, we are authorized to bill across the entire cooperative agreement enterprise to the feds. And in FY20, that amounted to $328,000. So that's why our budget number looks a lot smaller than the number of people we bring to the fight, if you will. And we punch way above our weight class because we've got quite a bit of federal funding coming into the organization. I'll jump now to the maintenance of military training facilities portion of the general support account, Mr. Chair. And again, our base, $9.7 million. We share that between the Camp Ripley Training Center and then our armories, training community centers, and the two air bases. And you can see the breakdown for payroll. This is basically used to support our facilities. So this pays the utilities, which we have a 50-50 federal match on the utilities and the maintenance activities in our armories. Those are also 50-50. Most of our facilities at Camp Ripley, though they are state-owned, are paid 100% federal support. It's a very strange process, but that's how that plays out. But you can see the amounts that go to the various facilities, and that covers the state share for many of those federal matched services. And then we do a little bit of PT contracting for architectural services and some phase one construction services, some environmental work and IT, et cetera. I believe there's one more here. Yes, additionally, we do contract for some janitorial services and snow removal and lawn care out in the armories. We also have to do some capital and non-capital equipment purchases, which include electronic security systems and the occasional piece of furniture or chair. And then also included in here, we have joint use agreements with airports that allow the C-130s from the 148th Fighter Wing to do landings and takeoffs there. It actually cuts their travel time significantly. Otherwise, they'd have to fly to a federal facility like Wolk Field, and they can do twice as many turns by flying to Rochester for just under $32,000 a year. So we think that's money well spent. And we do have to also pay the Minneapolis Airport Commission about $25,000 a year for the services that we use there. And then beyond that, we do building improvements and statewide indirect costs to maintenance operations, and we do pay the bonds that for armories that are owned by the Minnesota State Armory Building Commission. Next, I'll go into the incentives appropriation. This by far is the most volatile portion and the most hard to manage for us. It's a good problem to have right now in that we're under executing this appropriation this year. This, of course, is an area that was somewhat contentious 2 years ago. And we still think this is extremely important, but this is what we use to pay for state tuition reimbursement. You can see the numbers there. And then a number of bonus programs that we use to maintain the readiness of the Minnesota National Guard. We truly appreciate this funding from the legislature. You'll see that we did go through $11.1 million in FY20. I will tell you, in FY21, we are under executing this account, but we are a little bit reluctant to make changes moving forward because we have a number of factors that we believe will lead to pent-up demand in the coming biennium. We have two major units that have been deployed, and therefore their service members were not eligible to go to college, couldn't use the funding. And of course, COVID-19 has made people somewhat reluctant to go to college. We think that next fall, we'll see a bounce back. And so we're reluctant to look at any kind of a reduction in this account at this time. It's very difficult to forecast this. One thing we have found is there are a lot of factors that influence a service member's decision-making, whether they're gonna go to college or not. And we aren't sure what the economic impact of COVID-19 is going to have. Will that drive service members to go to college if they're unable to find work, or vice versa? Will an open job market take them out of college and then reduce our costs here? We did make some changes inside the program to require our members to use federal incentives first, but there's a certain amount of volatility there too, in that federal incentives programs change with very short notice. In fact, just 2 weeks ago, they cut the federal bonus program substantially with no notice to us at all. And the same kind of thing could happen with the federal tuition assistance program, though we aren't forecasting that at this time. We've been able to stretch our dollars quite a bit by using that federal tuition assistance program for most of our members. And the last one I'll delve into is probably the hardest to explain, but the most interesting at this time, and that's the emergency services appropriation. Again, this is an appropriation that doesn't really require any committee action. Normally, MMB forecasts this using a formulaic model to determine what they set aside in their budget forecasting, and that's just kind of what goes into the budget language for us. As you can see, though, the roll-up of the 8 years from 12 through 19 versus what we did in calendar year 20, over that time period, we went through $2.27 million worth of payroll in that eight-year period, and in 2020 alone, $13.5 million. A lot of man days, and we still have a handful of people on state active duty in support of COVID-19. And this one is also a very, very interesting one because we have a couple of appropriations that have crossed over two different state fiscal years. And so figuring out how to track the dollars from one fiscal year into the next with the same mission set has been very challenging. But we'll try to give you some more on that. What we've got so far in calendar 21 through the first of this month, one state active duty mission, and that was the Capitol security mission that we had over the inauguration window. And we have one other mission that's still open from 2019, and that's the COVID-19 support. But as I previously stated, I didn't state this part. In December, the federal government decided that they would allow us to shift our forces that were supporting COVID-19 mitigation into a federally funded status. So that dropped our state active duty payroll significantly. We were able to move about 400 people immediately off of state active duty and onto federal status. And like I said, we're down to just a handful of them. So I'll go on to this next slide, I think. There we go. And again, this is not broken by state fiscal year. It is instead affiliated with emergency orders. So the first one above on 2013 is the COVID-19 response executive order. And that order is still open. We are still providing support under that executive order, even though it's moved into the second year. You can see that we've gone through about $10.2 million in that account. However, these funds could be reimbursed by FEMA. That's a process that HSEM is going through right now. And we can expect, I'm gonna say up to 75% of that reimbursement, though. Today it was announced that in some states, the president has authorized them to go back and retroactively reimburse 100%. So it really takes a Ouija board to figure out exactly how this is going to look regarding its impact to the budget down the road. But you can see that first COVID-19 response, then we had a little flood, and then we went into civil disturbance. So we had the big one in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and then we had one that was kind of coincidental to that in Cass County. And there was a follow-up response that happened in 2087 that we had expenses against, and we still have some funds encumbered there. And you'll see those keep coming up. The most recent one, of course, is our state capital protection. That's actually at 2105, and the emergency orders are numbered by calendar year. So those are still open. What I think is significant here, when you see that budget available column, a total of $2.7 million, we think a substantial portion of that will wind up canceling back into the general fund. You'll see that from the civil disturbance response mission number 2064, which was the May-June riot, we've still got $943,000 on the table. We think most of that's going to cancel, but we do still receive bills and billing corrections from the federal government. So we haven't closed that yet and let that roll back, but we think that's kind of in the ballpark of where that's going to go. So if FEMA concurs with the reimbursement request, and we think they will with the COVID-19, with the civil disturbance response requests, those have already been submitted and denied, and then submitted for reconsideration and denied. But we think HSCM is going to try one more time with the change of administration and the potential for a change at the federal level. So difficult to say exactly what impact this is going to have on the state's budget, but in the end, the $20 million swing is significant, but not that significant in the big scheme of things. With that, I go back to the governor's request. Again, Mr. Chair, basically what we're looking for is pretty much what we got in the current biennium, plus a small increase to support increasing costs through inflation. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would submit myself to any questions the committee may have.
First time today I missed the mute button. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Kerr and General Mankey, for the presentation. Members, are there any questions? Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. If we could ask the question of what is the role going to be of the National Guard in the potential for civil disturbance that's coming up. It's basically, there's three parts to it. What is the role going to be? Is the National Guard going to be the primary responder or a secondary responder? And then third, what kind of memorandums of understanding or what type of coordination are you doing? Of course, not getting into operational tempo or anything else like that. But do you have the agreements in place right now with the other compendium organizations that are going to be either you're going to be supporting or that are supporting you?
Mr. Kerr or General Mankey, whoever wants to take that one.
Mr. Chair, this is General Mankey. I'll take that. First of all, our role would be, you know, we're still in planning for that, but our role would be supporting local law enforcement agencies, whether it's the State Patrol, potentially the Minneapolis Police Department or the St. Paul Police Department. So we have been planning for this really since the George Floyd civil unrest in May and June. You know, it kind of depends on how the trial goes, the extent of what we would be involved. We don't see us being involved, you know, from now until really until, you know, we don't see us being involved in jury selection and potentially being involved once the trial starts. But we continue to plan. You know, we have plans that we have have in motion to respond with the same number of service members on mission that we did before. And of course we have plans, hopefully that we don't need nearly as many of those service members, but we're continuing to plan and really not knowing what's gonna happen. And again, we would be in a support role of these local law enforcement agencies. As far as agreements with local law enforcement agencies, we don't necessarily have an agreement with them. However, we have started coordinating liaisoning with them, you know, down to the junior leader level so that we know what their plans are and know what would be expected of us if in fact we're used. Does that answer your question?
Yes, General. Thank you. Thank you, General. Yes, it does.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Raleigh, any follow-up?
No, thank you, Chair. I appreciate it.
I don't see any other questions. I do have a couple. Mr. Kerr, do you have a percentage of the Guard members that use the tuition, you know, just or rough numbers, you know, annually or that sort of thing?
Mr. Chair, thanks for the question. I guess I can give you some really detailed information. I don't have it readily available, but I'll send that over. Year over year, we track that information, not only by the number of users, but also the amount that goes to them. So I'll provide that to you, Mr. Chair, separately. But we've got a lot of detail regarding that.
Over. That'd be fine. That'd be fine, Mr. Kerr. Thank you. And then a follow-up on that. Does the Guard have, or do you have... agreements with some of these institutions of higher ed where they would be using this because, for instance, if our Guard members are three quarters of the way through a semester and then they get called out for a disturbance or something like that, are they going to lose or will they forfeit that tuition assistance or have we worked out some kind of agreements with these schools?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know that we've really worked out agreements, but we have worked with the legislature. And there are protections in law that give our guardsmen expanded rights to stay in school and work out arrangements with their professors so that they, if they have to miss a period of time because they're performing military duty, we work very closely with those institutions of higher learning, and they're required by law to give a lot of deference to our service members. And we generally don't have very much problem with that. We found that the education institutions are very cooperative and protecting our service members when they're students in their universities.
Well, and I appreciate that. I probably should have asked that 2 years ago when I first got this committee, Mr. Kerr. But anyway, that's good to know, because we certainly don't want to have any of our guards people that want to follow into higher ed to lose that opportunity for while they're serving the state or the country. So,
and Mr. Chair, I would just add that we have engagements with chancellors and whatnot of different university systems, and I think we have a pretty good relationship, and we have a full-time person who helps coordinate those issues if there are issues from service members.
Thank you. That's good to know. Appreciate it.
And Mr. Chair, I have just
a Representative Detmer.
Quick answer. I just came back in. I was at another committee, and but I would like to say, make a comment that I know that Military Affairs and Mr. Kerr has always done a great job bringing the information to us, and it's always been well laid out, so it's easy to understand for the most part. And General Mankey, I know you're in a very important position, and feel free to bring information to the Chair Eglund or myself. And I do have a question regarding our colleges and our state universities. How are those centers for our veterans? How are those centers doing now at the college level? I know they produce a spot where veterans can come in. They're increasing their education, and they can kind of get together. How is that handled? How's that happening right now in our different colleges and state universities? Maybe Mr. Kirk or the General Mankey could
Mr. Kerr that. Or General Mankey.
Representative Detmer, appreciate the question. So again, we have a full-time staff member who works with these different universities. And I know MNSCU particularly is very supportive of these centers. I don't know if you have visited any of the universities. Yeah. Metro Strait used to have a vibrant veteran service center, as well as various other ones. I know Itasca Community College had a veteran service center, and an opportunity for these veterans to get together and learn and whatnot. And our experience with most of them has been very positive and very supportive. I can't answer what's going on in these with the COVID environment. I mean, it's all a little bit unique right now. But I know once we're through the pandemic, we will have people that will visit these veteran centers and pay our appreciation and just check in and see if there's things that we can do to enhance them and make them better.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and General Mankey. I think it's important once we get back to normal, if there will be a normal. I visited some of these centers, veteran centers on campuses, and the people that are staffing these centers are very well in tune to what the benefits are for veterans. And many times college staff really don't know all of those benefits. That's why it's important to have those people on campus to share the information and what's out there. And it gives them a place to meet too, because many of the veterans that are now enrolled are older than your normal college student. They've been through some things in life, and they want to get there, and they want to get their degrees, and they want to graduate and get back to society and contribute. So thank you so much, sir.
And Representative Detmer, if you remember, recall 2 years ago, we had that young veterans group from the University of Minnesota that came and presented at a committee. We've reached out to them, and I think exactly what the general said is they haven't responded. So I assume in the COVID environment, they're doing things differently. So, but hopefully if we can get a response from them, we'll have them come talk to the committee about what they've been up to. I remember they're a passionate group of veterans that want to do the right thing. So. Any other questions from the committee for Mr. Kerr or General Mankey? Seeing none, General, Mr. Kerr, thank you, and we'll get moving on this budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members.
OK, Okay, members, next on the agenda is the Department of Veterans Affairs with a presentation on the governor's budget released last week. Today we have Commissioner Hershey and Mr. Johnson, Ben Johnson, who you heard earlier testifying on the bill. Commissioner, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Commissioner Larry Herkey, currently coming to you from the Little Falls State Cemetery today, and an opportunity to give a World War II medal out to a deserving member of the community up in Chisholm. So it's been a unique and fun day for me to get out and to do that. But thank you for the opportunity to present our 2022 and 23 biennial budget. This is budget recommendations for me. This is 2 years in as commissioner. And I think this has a pretty good budget that's going to reflect where we think we need to go as an agency. What I brought with me today is actually Mr. Powers, the financial management director. Mr. Powers, can you introduce yourself? Or Mr. Chair, can you introduce himself?
Mr. Powers, please introduce yourself for the record.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Powers. I am the CFO for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and have been for the last 7 years. I've got about 30 years of experience with the state of Minnesota in finance, and I am a Navy veteran, a retired Navy veteran. Good to be here.
Thank you for your service and thank you for being here. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also with me today is Mr. Johnson, who introduced himself earlier, my legislative director, and he'll step in if needed. Just a reminder about the mission of the agency. We serve veterans. We have about 312,000 veterans in the state of Minnesota. We serve also their dependents and their survivors. And our job is to connect them with those federal and state benefits that they've earned. So this is an important mission for the state and for our agency. Next slide, please. I'm going to let Mr. Powers at this time go through our base budget, and then I'll come back and talk about the change items. So, Mr. Powers, please.
Mr. Powers, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, our FY22-23 base budget consists of $296.7 million. That's for all funds. $151.8 million is a direct general fund appropriation, of which we transfer $115.5 million to the veterans' homes and $36.3 million for veterans' programs and services. In addition, for the veterans' homes, the $115.5 million, we also collect $125.9 million of VA per diems, resident maintenance fees, and Medicare reimbursement. In addition, we also have $2.8 million in special revenue funds that we collect for cemetery fees and federal reimbursement plat. In addition, that fund also contains the SOT license plates, of which we receive half, and military affairs receive the other half that we collect each year. And then $5.9 million is of federal construction funds for reimbursement of the new Duluth Cemetery. And so that's just basically clean up on that. That's usually lagging in these federal projects where we have to work with the Department of Administration to make sure the expenditures are covered for that. And then for the homes, we also have about $4.3 million of revenue, resident trust funds, and then gift accounts. In addition, we expect to spend about $6 million of the $12 million of the open appropriation for the Minnesota GI Bill. And there you go. So we have three visuals here for you. We have the expenditures by fund. As you can see, the amount that remains in the Veterans Services General Fund is the 14.2%. And of course, on the previous slide, I showed you how we transfer the $115 million over the Veterans Home into that special revenue account, which makes up 81% of the total. And then you could see some of the smaller amounts there in the other restricted special funds, construction funds, trust funds, and gift accounts. In the middle of the page, there are the expenditures by program. As you can see, that the veterans' homes is the 83% of the total. It was 17% for programs and services. And then there to the right, the expenditures by category, 72.5% is made up of salary and benefits, 18.6% for operating expenses, 6.5% for grants, aids, and subsidies, and then we have some smaller amounts for the other financial transactions and capital outlays. On the bottom of the page here, you can see we have a total of 1,286 FTEs, of which 110 of those are in programs and services, and 1,176 in healthcare. All right, I think we can go to the next slide. And with that, I'll turn it back over to the commissioner. But before I do, I did want to make note that in the previous biennium for the veteran health care, we did not receive a supplement to our budget. In fact, we actually took a cut. We took about $1 million cut there. So I want to preference that before we go forward, just to have committee members and the chair keep that in mind. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Powers. Commissioner Herkey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. There's four items which I'll talk to you today on change items for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We'll go through them each individually. These are the four items that will be covered. We'll go to the next slide. The first is in the area of programs and services in healthcare. We're seeking an operating adjustment of $8.2 million. As Mr. Powers had indicated, we have not received an adjustment in our healthcare area. We are actually used to carry forward to meet our requirements for the last biennium. The intent here would be to keep our current level of staffing in place that we currently have. The number of staff is differentiates from different times of the year between 13 and 1,400 individuals. And as you can see, a lot of our outlays are actually for compensation. This request would take care of step increases, increased insurance costs, coal loss, and like I said, a majority of our full-time staff, or staff that we have, is in the healthcare area. So it makes up the largest area, and we did not receive an adjustment, operating adjustment during last biennium. I would like to mention, before we go to suicide, as it relates to the operating budget, we do rate quite high. In fact, our ratings continue to go up in our Pinnacle surveys. It's a customer satisfaction survey. We're averaging 4.8 out of a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being the best. And the other area I think that we should be proud of is that we get inspected both by the federal VA and also by the Minnesota Department of Health. And we've done very well with our surveys and inspections that we've had in that area also, just based on the fact that we are doing everything the right way that we should for our veterans. With that, if we can go to the next slide. The second area I'd like to talk to you about is preventing veteran suicide. Each year we lose between 100 and 115 veterans, according to the Department of Health. We believe that that number is probably higher than that. It's just underreported. This is an area we have not had a program in for MDVA previously. We do believe that we can make a difference here. The governor has asked us to develop a program and a plan going forward to do reductions. Our intent with this area is to reduce by 2025 by 20%, and we would like to all but eliminate these suicides by 2035. We think we can do that. We've made, using borrowing staff and so forth, I've been able to work with the federal VA in a program called the Governor's Challenge. It's a collaboration basically with federal, state, and local and nonprofits to bring together all the different levels of government and non-governmental to put focus in this area. We think it aligns with our mission. We believe that we can partner with the Department of Agriculture, who has a good program and started working in this area a couple of years ago. And we believe we can have an impact in this area long term. We're asking for $1.65 million this biennium. That number in the out years actually goes down a little bit because of some of the upfront costs. This is the only area where I'd be adding additional staff. There'll be a suicide prevention coordinator, and there'll be a suicide prevention trainer slash analytics person that would be helping. So two individuals, two FTEs, added the staff. And again, this is the only area that I would be asking for an increase in staff. If we go to the next slide. This is an area that's near and dear to my heart and I think is important, and it's an area that the federal VA has been working on since 2005, and throughout the state of Minnesota, been working on this since 2010. We're seeking $6.3 million. This is a new area to expand our veterans homeless efforts. Today, as of just yesterday, I think we had 290 veterans currently on the veterans registry. That number was down before. We've had an increase, of course, due to COVID. Had a lot of veterans that, for whatever reason, have due to lots of jobs or whatever it might be in their life, have created a situation where they're homeless. The good news in this area is we've done great work, especially working with the federal VA on what's called a HUD-VASH voucher, which provides rental assistance and also wraparound services. We find that this support is the best support for our veterans and keeps them from being reoccurring on our veterans registry and gets them into society the quickest. We would like to replicate the HUD-VASH voucher for those veterans that are not eligible for HUD-VASH, and those are veterans that are not currently enrolled in the VA healthcare system because they don't have a service-connected disability, or there could be a situation with a discharge, but usually it's due to the fact they don't have a service-connected disability and therefore are not eligible for VA healthcare. Again, COVID-19 has made this an important issue. I can tell you today with this money over this two-year period that we would be able to immediately help 91 veterans. And I think about that number also throughout the rest of the biennium. This number we see in the out years probably reducing because of the fact that we believe once we stabilize and get this backlog of veterans that have been on the registry for quite a long time, we believe we can be successful in taking care of these veterans. Just as a closing item here, we're doing really well as far as our getting to our focus of being the fourth state to have functional zero. We have 6 of the 10 continuums in Minnesota that have declared functional zero and maintained those very low numbers in those continuums. So the last one was the suburban metro area. The 4 that we have left is St. Louis County, Ramsey County, Hennepin County, and the central area, which includes the St. Cloud area. We can go to the next slide. The last area is a one-time request. We're seeking $500,000 in FY22 to focus on the global war on terrorism. And actually, we're looking at 4 outcomes. I have a terrorism remembrance task force, of which Chair Eklund is actually a member of. The task force is 12 individuals that represent society as a whole, and it served in many different ways to include Gold Star Mother and other relatives of people that have served. Our intent is really to recognize those 40 to 45,000 veterans that have served since 9/11 during the last 20 years. And our focus for those funds will be to publish a definitive history on global war on terrorism, which is something that's been done in all wars, The second one is to develop a traveling exhibition, which will inform others about stories of Minnesotans and how they serve. There is also an educational component to that, which would be a program of instruction for K through 12, and also speakers bureau. And lastly would be a remembrance program, most likely in September of 2021, that would hopefully be held there in or around St. Paul, on the lower part of the Capitol area. And we'd like to have as many of those veterans as we can and their families to come and participate in the remembrance program. And that would be for those that have lost their veteran through this time period, and also those veterans that are still remaining with us. Next slide. And as a summary, I'm going to give it, Mr. Chair, we can give it back to Mr. Powers one more time.
Mr. Powers.
Chairman, committee members, okay, the change from governor's recommended base budget changes from 151.8 million of the direct fund appropriation to 168.5 million, which is an 11% increase. And you could see the breakdown for each of our divisions. The veterans homes, 115.5 million to 124.8 million. It's an 8% increase. And then our largest increases in our veterans programs and services area, due to those change items, 36.3 million to 43.7, which is a 20% increase. And you can see the biennial amounts for each of those change items for a total of $16.7 million. And as a note there to the right there, as the commissioner mentioned, we're only increasing our FTEs for that suicide program, which would be two additional FTEs. And without the operating adjustment, we would be faced with a 36 FTE reduction. And with that, I will turn it over to the commissioner, back to the commissioner to wrap it up.
Mr. Herkey.
Mr. Chairman, on this last page here, we have a website that you can go to to give you detail information as it relates to our agency budget overall. This is something, too, that we can, if needed, we could send out if that's a better way to distribute the information as it relates to the governor's budget for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And with that, I believe we're going to stand for questions that the committee members or Mr. Chairman that you would have for us.
Mr. Herkey, Mr. Powers, thank you. Mr. Johnson, first member question I see is Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and as always, thank you for MDVA for bringing the information to the committee. As you have in the years past, it's always been very complete. And I do have a question regarding the ending veterans homeless. This has been something that's been on the agenda for several years. Are there any other agencies like MACV that is doing the same thing that you could combine your efforts and even finances to accomplish the goal of zero homelessness?
For sure.
And whoever would like to answer that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, we do have 55 team members, I call them, that actually are focused with us. MACV is one of our largest, and the legislature actually provides a pass-through grant of $750,000 in our budget that goes to MACV. MACV, I can tell you, Representative Detmer, is on every single call that we have. We have every 2 weeks, we call every continuum of care, and we have a very, very focused and mission-driven evaluation of each person that's currently on the veteran registry. So this I think anywhere that I've been in state government, this is a great example of working together with others, whether they're nonprofit, local government, federal government, all working together and using all the resources that are currently available. I can tell you we are using both the local and federal funds as much as we can. What we found is that there's an area here in the middle that we need some help and support for in order to get these veterans that currently are not eligible for VA healthcare, get them a similar voucher that would allow them to have the rental assistance and the wraparound services to be successful. So to answer your question, we are working with NACFI and 54 other team members.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think it's important that you bring that information to this committee, and so that the members of the committee understand exactly, you know, maybe it's some of those different groups are and how they're working together. That's important to understand. And one last question is, in terms of the 9/11 project that you're looking at, have you considered possible legacy funds for that project? I know this is something that, it's a very historic thing with the 9/11. Maybe there's legacy funds there available for that.
Commissioner. Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, yes, that was brought to me just recently, and I will be looking into the possibility of that. I'm not sure what the availability is in that area, but I think that it would be potentially eligible. So we will ask for this. I don't know how successful, as it's been a while since I've worked with legacy funds, but I take your suggestion, and we'll make sure we do that going forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question, I've got two areas of questions. What is the average age of the veterans that are committing suicide in Minnesota?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh. There's two distinct areas. To come up with an average age probably is not representative of probably what's going on in Minnesota. I do have a longer, if we had a chance sometime to be able to have a longer briefing on this, but what we're seeing is there's two age groups that are distinctly needing help and assistance, and that is the younger folks. We're talking about 30 and below. By percentage, I believe they are the biggest group, but by pure numbers, it's actually the group of veterans is 65 and over is the area where the most veteran suicides are in Minnesota. So those two ends, the two polar ends, are the areas that we seem like we get the most suicides within the state of Minnesota in the area of veterans.
Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, do we have any type of a breakdown by MOS?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, that's kind of information that we actually would like our staff to be doing and working with the closer with the Department of Defense and getting more upstream of this. I really think, you know, putting gun locks on is important, and that's part of our plan going forward. But I would like to know what units these folks are coming from, what are the MOSs, maybe where they've served, to start doing some trend analysis to try to determine who potentially may be at risk in the future. So I'm thinking along the same lines that you are. It's just that I don't have that information as of today.
Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, and that leads me to the end point of this first question. Will these two FTEs give you the ability then to do the data and trend analysis that will help us to reduce the number of suicides?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, yes, that's the intent. The second position really is two-part. One is a data analyst. The other part of that second position is a trainer. And the intent would be to gather, and there is quite a bit of information that needs to be, that could be analyzed both from the state level and also from the Department of Defense. And yes, that would be our intent, is to get this information so that we can anticipate and help communities as it relates to the individuals that are most at risk.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other side of the questioning was, I want to make sure I heard this number correctly. On the side of the homelessness,
you're asking for $6.33 million. And then I heard the number 91 veterans. What did I hear with 91?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, the 91 veterans are currently of a subset of the 290 that are on the veterans registry for the state of Minnesota. There's 91 today that fit into the category that could use this funding today, right now, to get them into safe, secure housing. So that's a ready audience that's here and that we've identified. And we're continuing to look for local funding for these individuals, but they're not eligible for the federal funding. Mm-hmm. But they could use this money immediately to be able to move them into safe, secure housing and provide those wraparound services going forward.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that would represent about $69,500 $69,500 per each of these 91 veterans. How do you see the $65,000 or $69,000 being used? And have you considered alternatives like tiny houses or multi-use housing for these veterans? I guess I'd like to understand the approach that you're using. And am I characterizing it correctly that it's about $69,500 per veteran?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, the 91 represents the number that could be helped immediately. I don't have the number actually in front of me with a total amount, but maybe while we're speaking here that Mr. Powers or Mr. Johnson can get the total number so that you can get an idea. I can tell you we've used the numbers that the HUD-VASH program for the federal VA uses for Minnesota, so that those numbers have been tried and true as it relates to the number per veteran going forward. And to answer your question about tiny houses and different other opportunities, we are looking into other opportunities. That is the other issue that I have right now, and I'm working with communities and mayors and so forth throughout the four continuums that have not declared yet to ensure that we have adequate housing if this funding is approved and is available for these homeless veterans.
Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for giving the opportunity to ask these questions. Testifiers, just from a personal standpoint, I think we've got to take care of our veterans. I'm former 11 Bravo, so as a gun bunny. And I am a service-connected disabled veteran. And what we're doing here today, I believe, is very important. So thank you very much for taking the time to answer these questions.
Thank you, Representative Raleigh. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair Eklund and Commissioner. You might not have this statistic right off the top of your head, but looking at the number of suicides that we've had in Minnesota, how many of those were soldiers that were deployed and came back, and how many were that never have been deployed? Back a year or so ago, I read some interesting statistics on that, and it didn't seem to be much difference in the two. Maybe I'm wrong, but do you have that information?
For sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, we can get you, I'm not sure if we have that information now, but again, that's part of this information that I've requested from the Department of Defense. But I can tell you from the non-Minnesota information that I've reviewed on this subject, which has been vast, there really isn't much difference between the two. You'll find that suicide deployment is not the main reason for veterans taking their lives. There are several other things, of course, going on in each veteran's life, but deployment does not seem like it's the large overarching item that I think a lot of people would associate with suicide. So I think they're about the same in both groups, Mr. Representative Detmer.
Representative Detmer.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, if you do come across those figures, it'd be nice to maybe if you would bring it our way. Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Detmer. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. In terms of the homeless vets, are those just the veterans, or are we also talking about like families?
For sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berg, this normally the veteran comes with their family, so they could be a significant other. I know I recently went to where we put one of our people that was on the registry in Safe Secure Housing. It was in Chaska, Minnesota, and I got to meet the veteran, which was a female, and she had three children. So that's who we're taking care of. It's not just a lone veteran. In some cases it is, but in a lot of cases there are family members that do come along with them also.
Representative Berg.
Thank you. That was pretty much what I figured as I was kind of thinking about Representative Raleigh's questions around tiny houses or other living options. I would think depending on how many folks come with the veteran. And the last question that I have is, I absolutely agree with Representative Raleigh and the other people who have expressed concerns about how we're failing our vets, how we don't take care of them enough, and how important that it is to make sure that we are doing the very best we can by them. To that end, my question is, do you believe that the 1.65 million for vet suicide and the 6.33 million for homelessness efforts are commensurate with the needs? Do you feel like these numbers, this amount of money is enough to offer them not only what they deserve but need?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berg, I do believe in both cases it's the right amount of money. I'm a person that doesn't like to ask for more than is needed, and we've analyzed both areas in detail. So I can tell you in both areas we believe that we have the adequate funding there, and in the case of in the case of suicide prevention, I think it gets us off and started and gets us away from planning and into execution, which I think is important. In the area of homelessness, it's sort of like that last mile. We really need this in order to get over the hump and really move those last four continuums of care forward and be able to get to the goal of being functional zero for the state of Minnesota. I do believe we can do it. I've seen the work that's been done. We've put 952 veterans in the last 2 years in safe, secure housing, and we've been very successful in doing it. We've had a huge demand. People come to us because they understand that we can actually perform and we can help them and we can assist them to for a better life so they can reintegrate with society. So I think these numbers are accurate, Representative Berg.
Representative Berg.
Thank you. That's really great to hear. Happy to be a part of supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Not seeing any other hands raised. Commissioner, thank you, and Mr. Johnson, Mr. Powers for this presentation. I applaud you for the efforts that we're going forward with on taking care of our veterans. I do want to comment on the veteran suicide portion. Many of you know I also sit on the Ag Finance Committee, and I was glad to hear you mention what the ag community has going on with their suicide prevention. I think it's after watching that program develop, it'll be a good role model to pattern your efforts and the department's efforts under. So thank you, Commissioner, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Powers, and we'll be talking soon, I'm sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
All right, members and staff, our next meeting is Tuesday, February 9th, 2021. We have a budget presentations from the Bureau of Mediation Services and from the Department of Labor and Industry, and one bill from Representative Frederick. Any member questions before we adjourn?
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Johnson from the VA had one more closing comment before we adjourn. I think he was trying to signal that.
I apologize, Mr. Johnson. Didn't see your hand raised. Mr. Johnson.
Chair Eklund, thank you. I couldn't find the raise hand button, so I was just waving my hand. So to Representative Raleigh's question about the breakdown, The way that we developed the number for the amount at the homeless veterans supportive housing and wraparound services, our goal really was to support a total of about 360 housing units. And the way that we broke it down was about 150 housing vouchers using a figure of just under $900 per month. So times 2 years, that's the $3.2 million for 2 years worth of vouchers. Then we also developed a number, $7,700 per voucher, is based on Medicaid hourly service rates of about just under $70 an hour. Again, 150 vouchers times 2 years is $2.3 million. And the final component of that number that we developed was a vacancy reserve fund. We look at about $75,000 per year to allow case managers, the folks that we're providing the wraparound services, to hold units. It's a very tight market for housing, and the goal there would be able to put a down payment on a home, excuse me, on a housing unit. And so that is the total. That's how we developed the number. And I just wanted to be responsive here and now rather than trying to provide stuff later on. So thank you for the additional time.
Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I really appreciate that. I think I wrote down everything as quickly as possible. Could we have staff make sure that that gets distributed and is put into our minutes, please? Because what I anticipate, Mr. Chair, is I got a text while the testifying was going on that how can we spend $6.3 million on 91 vets? And it just didn't sound like that was what we were supposed to be hearing. So getting these numbers is an awful lot easier for me to go back to the people that are asking questions. So thank you very much for providing that information, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Raleigh, and Mr. Johnson and Mr. Kerr also from our previous one. We'll make sure that all those member questions, we get the information. Not seeing any other hands raised. Travis, I did something to my screen, so I can't see everybody. So if I'm missing somebody, let me know. Otherwise, I'll give it a second here, and we'll see you next Tuesday. We're adjourned.